My name's Christine Kramer. I grew up in Portland, Oregon. I was a kid in St. John's. Shout out to my high school speech teacher, Ms. Nick. I attended Roosevelt High School, and she encouraged me to get involved with KBOO as a high school student. So KBOO's always felt like home. These days, after running numerous political campaigns, primarily in Nevada and California, and I ran a few in Oregon back in the day, I am now working on organizing delegates to the Democratic National Convention that's taking place in July 2020 who will vote for their choice of president solely on the issue that that president will deliver Medicare for all for the American people, because we cannot wait anymore. What transformed my life around this issue was I had a candidate, Amy Villella, who's featured in the film Knock Down the House. Her 22-year-old daughter was killed by our for-profit healthcare system. And as a mother myself, I just can't anymore. That I spent a lot of time in politics working for the profit, for the lesser of two evils, and realizing that Americans die every day in our for-profit healthcare system, I couldn't do it anymore. So my activism goes back a very long time. I ran for office in Nevada in 2014. I ran a congressional candidate, Dr. Stephen Fry, back in 2012, solely around the issue. He was a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, solely around the issues of ending the war on drugs and transforming our healthcare system. But then when Amy came along to me in 2017 and said, "I need to run for Congress, my daughter died, and I'm not going to let this happen to another family," I looked at that and said, "Your fight's my fight. And as women, we need to stand together." And my committee, I formed a committee, Medicare for All Delegates Network, that these delegates that I'm helping get elected to delegate positions to then represent their state to go to the national convention, that those delegates will act as a voting bloc and vote for the candidate that will bring us Medicare for All. And that is the only way that we are going to beat a group of superdelegates that are going to be committed to the most establishment candidate. And the establishment candidate is going to bring us more of the same.
Right. So could you break down a little bit what the structure of the Democratic National Committee is, the first, the second ballot? What is the difference between a delegate and a superdelegate?
Absolutely. So when we're selecting our president in the Democratic Party, you start off at your local contest. And your local contest in most states is a primary election. And then you go through your local Democratic Party and you get elected as a county delegate. Then you go to your state convention. You get elected as a county delegate. Then you go to your county convention. From your county convention, you then get elected to your state convention. At your state convention, there will be a runoff election, and you will get elected to represent your state at the national level as a delegate. In caucus states, you have to show up to your caucus. And we only have two caucus states right now. Those are Nevada and Iowa. I'm from Nevada, and I've run the caucus three different times. I ran it twice as a neutral party official. You go to your neighborhood meeting, you get your neighbors to elect you a delegate to the county convention, then the county convention elects you to the state and on. So we get to the national convention. And the national convention, most of the delegates are supposed to be those elected by fellow Democrats. It doesn't always happen that way. What happened in 2016 in Nevada was our meeting was shut down at the state level, and a bunch of people just got appointed. The Democratic Party also says so many, they have diversity rules. They have rules about so many people who are young, so many people who are old, and each they designate different categories, Black, Latino, Pacific Islander, that need to be represented. So it's not a simple show up and get yourself elected type of situation that you have to figure out. And this is where I get into training people to run for these national delegate positions. You have to figure out where you fit in your state's delegate selection plan and find your niche and go to the voters that vote at your convention and say, "This is the particular role I fill, vote for me." And there are at-large, there are delegates that are usually assigned based on your congressional district, And then there are delegates that serve at large. So early in the process, starting the first week of January, is when people who want to be national delegates need to start filing their paperwork. People don't realize that. It's usually this insider job that people know someone talks to them, they get recruited. One of the differences also is that depending on the presidential campaign, they will decide if they pay the expenses for those who attend the convention. And depending on if you're a member of another group or a PAC, you can have your expenses paid to attend the national convention that way. I'm looking through the fundraising for my group, paying for the expenses for people, particularly people who have lost a loved one to our for-profit healthcare system, to get them to the national convention, because they will not yield, that they will go to that convention and they will vote their conscience for Medicare for All and will not yield to the pressure. And that many people don't realize that there is a lot of pressure, that we have a lot of lobbyists within the Democratic Party. So going back to how these elections take place, you will get elected and you will get to sit on the floor of the convention as a general delegate, and they do the roll call of states and they say so many delegates for this person, so many delegates for that person. Where I'm attacking the second ballot of the Democratic National Convention is that if we have more, three or more people up for presidency, that vote is going to be split. I don't know who's going to get that vote. That polling is too early right now, and polling does not work in caucus states. Caucus states, you're depending on the individuals wake up the morning of the caucus. And they need to wait, to be quite honest, if you want to participate in a caucus in your state, you need to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning, bundled up, standing outside your caucus location by 7 a.m., doors open at 9, doors lock at 10. You need to have everyone aware that these steps all take place. And I don't feel like any of the campaigns right now are communicating that this is a street fight. Winning a caucus is a street fight. Winning a primary is a street fight. And I don't see the street fight going on yet. And it felt like that street fight has happened earlier, and that we're still in a phase of playing nice between the presidential candidates. So my goal is, and it's a FEC-recognized committee, I do not coordinate, work with, advise, or be directed by any presidential candidate. My goal is getting Medicare for All. And I believe that the only delegates that will go to the convention, vote solely on Medicare for All, are going to be people who have lost loved ones. And I want people who have lost loved ones or just emphatically committed to Medicare for All getting elected in these elections. And there are not a lot of people who I looked at what my role was going to be in the 2020 cycle, and I looked at the experience that I have as a former party official. I look at the experience I have as a member of the Democratic Party Platform Committee, and the experience that I have having run as a former delegate. I ran in Oregon in 2000, and I've run in Nevada, and that was how I came to be selected as a platform committee member. So knowing all of these people, and I kind of geek out on all of the rules and Robert's Rules of Order, that there have been a lot of changes since 2016, that I do give credit to the Sanders campaign that they attempted to negotiate those changes. I do not, however, feel confident that they're going to put resources in fighting the party this cycle, and that it's going to need to be in the hands of individual groups. And that Bernie Sanders is not the only candidate that has a solution for Medicare for All. And if we get to a second ballot and Sanders is not part of that ballot, I need to have delegates that are organized around Medicare for All who are going to look at the two candidates and go, this is the one that's going to get us closest to that. We need to be emphatic about it, that there are people dying and we can't be in love with one candidate. We need to be in love with the solution. And we need to love our families and our community and love the people who, without health insurance, are dying, and the people who are about to die if we don't get this done.
What's one thing that you think people might not understand about Medicare for All?
I think that many people don't understand that your overall cost of health care for you and your family is going to go down. Your taxes may go up, but look at what you're paying for in premiums. Look at the life decisions you have to make because of your health care insecurity. You may have a great job and it provides good health insurance, but that company could go out of business. You could work for the government and there could be a political restructuring and you're out of a job. That no one has a guaranteed job for life in our country. No one has the guarantee of health care in our country. So I think the biggest misunderstanding is that people who are comfortable right now may believe that by getting something different, they're going to lose the security of what they have now. And what I'm asking for is that we all consider a world where everyone has health care security, where the people who make our lives beautiful, the artists and musicians, have gone a very long time in our country without stable health care. The teachers in our country have crappy health care systems, that we have consistently underfunded public servants to a degree that Medicare for All would make their lives better too. If you can't do it for the artist or the musician, think about the school teacher that has this massive deductible that they can't afford. And look at your family budget and look at your deductible and go, if something happened, if I had a heart attack tomorrow, could I afford that deductible? A heart attack is a $100,000 incident. A snake bite is a $100,000 incident. A premature baby is a $940,000 incident. And your health care, you're going to pay for that after you've met your deductible. Then you're going to have a maximum limit. And that many people believe that we were covered and saved from these things by the ACA. And the ACA didn't solve these problems. And the ACA has, when I talk to small business owners, they're very upset about it. And I think as Democrats, we need to acknowledge the failures of the ACA, that among the promises were that your premiums would not go up. Premiums did go up. And we look disingenuous when we say that they didn't, because small business owners have the receipts to prove it. And as policymakers, we need to believe that if you're big enough to do it, you're big enough to own it. So let's own the failures that happened with ACA. Let's own the successes, such as that people are covered for pre-existing conditions now. But what use is your pre-existing condition being covered if your family can't afford the copayment, if your family cannot afford the deductible? So the ACA was a half measure. The ACA could have gone further. That as Democrats, we failed to successfully organize around that issue. And to that, I'll be honest, I do blame Obama for America and Organizing for America that came in after that, because well-meaning people went into those organizations and their dissent was corralled and they were directed by the sitting president. This is how much outrage you're allowed to have over this issue. I can tell you now that people have been dying that whole time. And yes, the ACA has saved some people, but we still continue to have Americans die in our country. And we still continue to have a healthcare system that is difficult to manage, that I think about how much time. And I have a very healthy family. I've been blessed to have healthy children. My two oldest children have Asperger's syndrome, and I would have to argue hours to get them their ABA therapy. And their applied behavioral therapy changed their lives. That a generation, had my children been born a generation earlier, never would have been able to attend public school as they have or attend college. And I spent hours of my life fighting that. And it was a privilege to be able to do that, that I had time to do that. Working families don't have time. There were weeks that it was 8 hours, 12 hours on the phone, holding, having to explain to people what my child's condition was and why they needed their therapy. And there are parents that I've spoken to, their children have cancer, and they have to explain that child's cancer to someone who does not know anything about it, but just that based on the procedure code and based on the cost, they have to deny it the first time. One of the things we get with Medicare for All is that these policies that happen within the insurance industry, such as blanket denying procedure codes the first time, every time, just because of that procedure code, that goes away. Think about the hours of your life you get back. You're not arguing over a procedure code. A qualified medical professional has decided that you or your loved one need this procedure. Let's do it.
So for people who are interested in this Medicare for All delegate network that you're creating, mm-hmm. how can they get involved?
You can join us on Medicare for All Delegates Network on Facebook. I also have a website, MedicareForAllDelegates.com. I am also taking direct questions through the email address. It's Medicare for All Delegates, and it's Medicare, the number for all delegates at gmail.com. I'll provide other links and information. I'm Christine Kramer on Twitter, at Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Kramer, K-R-A-M-A-R.
Awesome. Thank you so much. For KVU Evening News, I'm Althea Billings.